Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Has listening to How Fitting helped you create a better fit in your fashion business? Episode 100 of this podcast is coming up, and I'm planning a special episode featuring the most notable moments from the 104 guests I've had on this podcast so far, plus your story. Head over to howfittingpodcast.com and tell me about your favorite How Fitting episode and how it has impacted you or your business. Submit your answers or send me a voice note by August 1st, 2024 to be included in the episode. The link is in the show notes. Today, I am joined by Kat Williford of Pemmute. So welcome to the show, Kat.
Thank you so much for having me, Allison.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear more of your story. For those listening who are meeting you for the first time, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Yep. So my name is Kat Williford, and I am the owner and designer behind Pemmute Apparel. We are a made-to-order clothing company located in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we use only natural fibers. Everything is pre-washed and pre-shrunk, so it's very easy to care for. And most importantly, we offer sizes extra small through 4XL, and we also do custom sizing.
Wow. Yeah, that's one thing I noticed when I was following your brand is the amount of kind of pre-production work that you do and the sizing options that you offer for custom, which it's amazing.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I think it really helps our customers to be able to offer the custom sizing and the wide size range. And we get less returns because things fit well. So it works well for us too.
Awesome. So I want to talk about, get into a whole backstory and stuff, but let's kind of dive into the sizing part of it because that is something that I wanted to ask you about. How does your team get that custom sizing to work? Because I know so many brands, like they'd love to be able to do that, but it's just kind of the logistics of, are we making a new pattern for every order? And how is that working kind of on the production side for you? And I know you have a small team as well.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I went to school at the Savannah College of Art Design, and they're really heavy on pattern making knowledge. So I don't think that I could offer the custom without the knowledge that I gained through school about patterning. So that's been really important. And I've definitely expanded my knowledge just like over the years working designing patterns. So I started off with sizes extra small through extra large, I think, when I first started Pemmute in the U.S., and we could talk about the backstory later. But we just expanded our sizing over time using different models as to standardize our fits. Mm-hmm. And then for custom, I still cut every single order myself. So we have a sewing team, and then we have a studio assistant who will pack all of our orders and do organization things. But I still cut every single piece. So a lot of it is just my personal knowledge, and we have our patterns that are the standard sizes, and our pieces are relatively simple fit-wise, so customizing them is not super crazy. I mean, there's a jumpsuit might be extra complicated, but most of our pieces aren't too difficult for me to customize. So sometimes I'll use chalk, sometimes I'll just free cut, depending on how complicated it is. But yeah, it's all just me when I'm cutting.
Wow, that's impressive.
Oh, thanks. Well, it took a lot of years to get to this point, but
I'm sure. Yeah. So you're not necessarily like making a whole new pattern for every custom or like every custom order. You're kind of using the closest size, and then maybe the inseam length needs to be adjusted, or the rise, or making those kind of adjustments on the fly as you're cutting the piece. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So I'll make pretty detailed notes for each customer based on what customizations they might need. And honestly, probably like, I would say at this point, 75% of our online orders do end up being customized to some degree. Sometimes it's just a little bit of added or decreased elastic, but sometimes it's a pair of pants that needs inseam, rise, seat, and elastic adjustment. I try not to make things crazy complicated. We usually don't change the circumference at all. If we do need to change circumference, we would just go up or down a size, but it is mostly in length.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was going to ask, what types of customizations do you have as options? Because I think, I'm not wrong, you also do kind of like different colors of fabric options too.
Yes, we do offer that. So any of our styles can come in any of the other colors that we have in stock, even if they're not listed on the website, which that's pretty easy for us to do, just changing the color of something as long as we have it in stock. So we do offer that. We even offer, like, if someone has their own fabric that they want to send us, depending on what it is, we can use their fabric to make a garment, one of our own styles. So yeah, we're pretty flexible. And the nice thing about being made to order business is that we can do that. So it's fun for us to be able to make different styles every day instead of making the exact same piece over and over.
Yeah, it's kind of a different way of working than a lot of brands traditionally, where they're like, they have their one fit model, they set their specs up, they get their sizing, and then they produce in bulk. And that's what you get if you order it.
Yeah, for sure. And we still do offer the custom sizing, and that is most commonly used for wholesale. And there's plenty of people who just order standard sizing from us, but a lot of it we do end up sending to wholesale.
Gotcha. Of the standard sizing.
Did I say custom? Yeah, I meant standard.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into a little bit more of your background. You mentioned you went to Savannah College of Art and Design, but what kind of brought you to fashion in the first place? And what was kind of the journey to this brand and how you do things with Permute?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting story. I went to SCAD. I wasn't quite sure when I wanted to major in when I started, but I knew how to sew. My mom had taught me to sew when I was little. And actually, my great-grandma had owned a yarn shop. My grandma, both of my grandmas were big into sewing, and my mom as well. So it definitely, the knowledge has been passed down in my family.
That's so cool.
So when I got to SCAD, I checked out the fashion program. I was super impressed. So I ended up, after vacillating between a few majors, I ended up picking fashion, and I'm really glad I did. But yeah, the fashion world is interesting. It's very glamorized when you're in school and you think, oh, I'm going to graduate and I'm going to work for a really cool designer in New York, and my life's just going to be like so creative. And that's what
row
you
imagine fashion shows
school.
And wear heels.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, our senior year, we were SCAD students were selected to participate in New York Fashion Week. That was like, it was this cool program through Elle Magazine. And so like 25 or 30 of us got to go up and show in New York Fashion Week. So it really did feel like that was going to be my life. But yeah, I graduated. I got a job at a mall brand. It was right after the recession, so I needed a pretty safe job at the time. And I also wanted to get paid. And I was looking at some of the New York jobs, and it just didn't seem very feasible to be working in New York and being able to live there with a fashion designer's salary. So yeah, I ended up in Columbus, Ohio. And though the people were great at the job, I did not feel creative at all. And I was really kind of shocked at how was and the lack of creativity, the fact that it was all about CrossFit, all about just like churning out sweatshirts and little like sparkly tops. And it just, yeah, it felt really uncreative. And I kind of hit a crossroads there, wondering what I should do next. Should I even be in fashion? What should I be doing? Because I didn't really want to go to New York at the time, realizing that I probably wasn't going to get paid a lot. And actually, talking to some of my friends who had jobs there, they weren't really being creatively fulfilled either. So I was dating this guy who was Hungarian, and I knew a lot of people who lived in Budapest. So I decided that I was going to quit my job and I was going to move to Europe and just see what was going to be the next step for me after being there for a while. So I moved to Budapest. And I ended up staying for 3 years. It's the coolest city. I love Budapest. And it's just really creative. The people there are super entrepreneurial, very friendly. It's extremely affordable for Americans to live there. And they had this program for a self-employment visa. So I was able to start my own company and employ myself with that company to get a visa. I don't know if you can do that now, but at the time it was possible and it wasn't that difficult. So that was what I did.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I think it was doable in a few different countries, and I don't know how it is now, but at the time you could do it. So that was what I did. And there was this cool screen printing studio in Budapest that I could rent out. And I started, I bought some sewing machines and I was sewing different clothes in my little flat in Budapest, and I was screen printing t-shirts, and I was mostly selling to tourists at little pop-up street. But that's how the name Pamut came to be. Pamut actually means cotton in Hungarian.
Cool.
So that is how the name of the company came to be. And then in 2017, I decided to move back to Raleigh. I'm from Raleigh. And I had broken up with my boyfriend, so it was kind of a good time. Mm-hmm. And that was when I moved back, and I had to refocus what the brand was going to be about, because I had originally started selling tourist tees and that wasn't going to work in Raleigh. So I refocused around ideas that felt more relevant to me at the time, which were the size inclusivity and the customization option.
Nice. Yeah, that's quite the journey.
Yeah, it was definitely a unique journey. And I'm so thankful for all of the people that I met along the way, especially everyone in Budapest who was really encouraging of me to start my own company. Yeah. I don't think I would have done it otherwise.
Yeah, was it something that you had already always kind of thought about doing? Or was that just I want to move to Europe and this is the way I can do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think starting a company was always a dream of mine. And I mean, who doesn't want to live in Europe? So when the opportunity presented itself, I was there.
So I'm curious, how has kind of these different experiences, fashion school, the job in Ohio, being in Budapest, and then now with Pamut in Raleigh, how has that shaped kind of your view of the fashion industry?
Well, I think I've seen a few sides of it, and pretty quickly after, maybe I should start. So my first internship was actually at a company called Raleigh Denim, and they're obviously based in Raleigh, and they obviously make jeans, mm-hmm. and they're a sustainable company. And when Victor, the owner, started the company, it was before sustainability was even a concept in fashion. He was one of the first people to start a slow fashion clothing brand. So I saw that firsthand back in 2010 and thought it was really cool that he was making jeans in North Carolina from North Carolina denim. So I think that put the idea in my head of sustainable slow fashion pretty early. And then after, interning there, going to school, and then seeing the fashion industry at large and how most fast fashion is produced, I really saw the contrast pretty starkly. So yeah, I mean, it's been interesting to see both sides of that. I do think there's obviously middle ground, but I saw the two extremes pretty early on in my career. So it made it pretty obvious where I wanted to be on that spectrum.
Yeah. What about the slow fashion were you really drawn to? And on the other side, what about working for this other brand where you're like, ooh, I don't like that, other than not feeling creatively fulfilled?
Yeah. So, I mean, the creative fulfillment was a part. I mean, I love being hands-on. And when you work slow fashion, locally made, tailor-made clothing, you're making everything yourself, or your small team is making everything. Mm-hmm. So when you work in a big mall brand, you just draw up a sketch, you choose from a board of the approved fabrics that you're allowed to use, and then you see the item in stores a year and a half later. So it feels extremely removed from the process. You mm-hmm. don't know who's making it. You don't get to see any of that. And so that part of it was tough for me. And also just in the scenes after having done a little bit more research. I mean, I was working for that mall brand when the Rana Plaza disaster happened and the factory in Bangladesh collapsed and killed thousands of people. And so I was working for a brand that might have had clothing produced in that factory when it happened. And that felt terrible, so that like I might be contributing to that situation. So I think actually that was kind of maybe the big reason that spurred me to leave that brand and realize like how bad it actually was, because you obviously working for a brand like that, you don't really see that or hear about it. But when you hear about something like that in the news, it becomes way more real.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great point. It's like, it is so removed a lot of brands from the design and even from the pattern making. You're obviously very skilled at a pattern maker. And even a lot of that is done overseas at the factory that you've never been to. You're not really talking to the person. You're just, you get the sample, you make some comments and send it back. And even kind of the craft of pattern making and fitting, I feel like, is sometimes lost in that type of environment as well.
Yeah, I mean, so the brand I worked at, they had, and most larger brands, at least at the time, brands have their own pattern making people on staff, pattern design people. I was not one of those people. I was a designer and not a technical designer, so it's different. But, you know, yeah, I like, there is that removal of, I do think the technical designers at the brand I was at probably had more of a connection with the factories. But even then, there's like factories within factories, or there's like outsourcing from the factories that we would work with. So we might send a production kit to a factory, but they might send it to another factory to get it done. Or they might outsource like the sequining to women in their own homes. And you have no idea like how those women are living and what the situation is there for them. So there's just so little control going into a situation like that. You just don't know how people are being treated at all.
So what were the values or things that were important to you when you started your own brand, either when you were in Europe or now that you're back in the States?
Yeah. So it really, to me, it started with trying to source ethical fabrics. And at first that was like, definitely the most important to me was I only wanted to buy organic fabrics, and I wanted to know exactly where they came from. As I've grown in this business, it's actually for me become more about the people that I'm working with rather than the fabrics themselves. And that's for a couple reasons. I think there's people and planet, and obviously they're intertwined, but it has become more important to me to make sure that the people who are working on looming and our fabrics and growing our fabrics are taken care of. And obviously the people who work for me as well. And that the people around our product has kind of taken precedence over the fabric itself. So I'm a little looser with my fabric requirements now. And it also allows me to offer, I think, higher quality fabrics. If you're only looking for organic fabrics, you're just so limited. Unfortunately, I wish we had a lot more choices. But if I was only selling organic fabrics, I would be so limited with the options I could choose. So now I focus a little bit less on the certification of fabrics and a little bit more on finding really great companies to buy fabric from where I know the people are being treated well.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. And there is kind of that trade-off. I know certifications, I know some people in the slow fashion, fair trade realm are like really big on certifications. And then some are like, you know what? At some point, it's more about vetting them individually, getting to know the mill or the factory or the people and the building that relationship. And because some of them, it's like they are pretty sustainable or they are paying very fair wages, but they just aren't paying for those certifications. Have like,
yeah,
the last little bit of it.
Are expensive and time consuming. And then you have to get every single fabric certified. And like one of the brands that I buy from in India, they've got like 2,000 different types of fabrics, which is amazing for me, but they were to get them all certified, they wouldn't be able to carry 2,000 fabrics. So I have a lot of choice there. And they do advertise like AZO, AZO Free dyes. There are like certainly fair trade initiatives that they're certified for, but the fabrics are not certified organic. And I'd love for them to be, but I'm also not going to stop buying from this company because they're not getting the certification.
Interesting. It's always a balance with those things.
It sure is.
So you still do natural fibers, it seems like, from your website that are all still, like, even if they're not all organic, they're all natural fibers and, like, really nice yes. fabrics. Are you part of the design process for the textiles themselves, or are you just kind of, you work with these particular companies and you choose kind of from their existing kind of stock lines?
It depends. I work right now. We're working with three different sourcers for different fabrics. And the one in India, we do have some design choice freedom to pick different colors, different patterns. So that's been fun to start experimenting with that. Our linen supplier just got back to us last week, and we actually might be able to custom dye some colors. So I'm thrilled about that. And then our third supplier that we work with a lot, we don't have any say in the color options. So yeah, it's a total range.
Gotcha. So when you're designing your pieces, like, what comes first for you in your creative process, like the silhouette of the garment or the fabric itself?
That's a great question. Definitely the fabric for me. Like, when you're working with sustainable natural fiber options, there are just fewer options. And so I'm mm-hmm. going to choose the fabric first, the color, and then I kind of let that tell me what it should be. I do keep in mind ideas or trends that I happen to have for that season. And so sometimes an idea pops in my head and I'm like, okay, I really want to do this one silhouette and I'm going to make it work in our fabrics. So mm-hmm. for example, like fall, I think we're going to do a button up. And I'm really excited for that. And so I'm starting to envision how that design will work with the fabrics that I've picked. And actually, some of our fall fabrics just came in today. So I'm super excited. I would say fabric first. And then I kind of let it tell me what it wants to be.
Yeah, I'm the same way usually. I'm inspired by the fabric. I kind of have a general idea if I'm like making something for myself, what type of fabric I'm looking for, but mm-hmm. I let it speak to me of like, this would be a great whatever.
Yeah. Well, the drape and the thickness of the fabric is so important, and you can't make a flowy dress out of corduroy. So mm-hmm. you have to look at the fabric first in a way.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, when you're designing new pieces and You're it sounds like doing the design, the pattern making, and then kind of what does the rest of the process look like? Who's on your team?
Yeah, I mean, the design process itself and the pattern making process takes maybe 3 to 4 weeks out of the season. So we have two big seasons a year, and then we'll have mini collections too. But it's a very short phase compared to the production. So once everything is designed and the patterns are made, then the fabric is ordered, the fabric comes in. We actually pre-wash all of our fabric so that it does not shrink when you wear and wash it. That's really important to me. There's nothing I hate more than a really well-made garment that you can't wash. Mm-hmm. So everything's pre-shrunk. And then, yeah, we start on production. So after our styles are released, we get the orders in, and we get wholesale orders coming in often at the same time, and we're just making everything in order. So sometimes I'm able to bulk cut different pieces. For example, if a wholesale order comes in mm-hmm. and they ordered 3 smalls in a certain style or whatever, I can cut those all together. But if it's a lot of custom pieces, I'm cutting them one by one. And then we have our little way of organizing everything, but we try and batch styles and colors to sew them all together to keep it a little faster. So if we're cutting and sewing fuchsia linen, we do it all at the same time, and we might spend a week and a half just on that color to keep things easy. And I have right now, I only have one sewer. I usually have two, but right now it's just one. So that's been interesting. We've been real busy. And mm-hmm. I have our Yeah, and then I have our studio assistant, and we do outsource occasionally, depending on the style. A lot of the times, if we do like a sweatshirt, t-shirt, we'll outsource that to a local facility that's based in Asheville, North Carolina. And I was for a while shipping to our sewer who used to be our main sewer, and she moved to Arizona, but she has got another job, so she can't help us anymore. So that'll be interesting when we have our big new seasonal drop, figuring that out, but I'm sure we'll find some help.
So what made you decide to go the route of kind of having your own in-house team of sewers or like that you work with versus producing with a factory? Is it really just to have the option to do kind of these custom one-off orders?
When I started in the U.S., I did work with a factory quite a lot, and I just found that it was impossible to predict what people would buy. So I ended up really quickly over like 1 to 2 seasons with a lot of excess inventory that I wasn't able to sell. And then I started realizing it would make more sense to do a made-to-order model. So I switched over to that pretty quickly. And it's definitely been a lot lower risk. I mean, Pemut is completely self-funded. So I don't really have hundreds of thousands of dollars to put into production every season. And I don't think I would want to do it that way anyway. I like to keep our risk factor low. I know when I'm ordering fabric or when we're making garments that they've already been sold more or less. So our risk factor is very low. And for a self-owned business, that's kind of the way you want to be. And it's definitely proven to be the right choice with the current economic slowdown.
Yeah, have you seen things this year? I mean, I feel like every time I look at social media, there's another slow fashion brand closing. It breaks my heart.
It's a huge bummer.
Yeah, so how have things been in terms of your business over the years and being able to sustain yourself as a business?
Yeah, well, this year is definitely slower, but it has worked out really well for me because I just had a baby. So it would have had to be, thank you. Yeah, it would have had to be slow for me anyway. I had a baby in October. So in a way, the timing has worked out really well that we're a little bit slower, but I can only work like 3 half days a week at the moment. I'm about to add a couple more half days. But yeah, I think that's helped. And we've just made sure that we're really lean and that we're not over buying fabric, and we've kept our hours steady. We do have really loyal customers just from offering the custom size options and from having really good customer service and good quality. So we haven't, I don't think, noticed the same dip that maybe some other brands have noticed. So I feel really lucky in that, but also we have noticed a bit of a dip, but it's worked out with having the baby.
Yeah, that's great. And I feel like that's one of the huge benefits of working for yourself and like having your own business. You can arrange your work around your life and not the other way around.
Yeah, so it's been great. To be totally honest, one of the reasons I wanted to own my own company was when I was working at that fast fashion brand, I saw women who would have babies and they would just quit usually because they couldn't work in the fashion industry and have a kid, or they would have their kid in daycare until like 7 p.m. because we often had to work that late. So I realized pretty quickly that it just wasn't sustainable if you wanted to have kids. So this has been absolutely wonderful. I have great employees. I have flexibility. Sometimes I have to work on the weekends, but it's been great to be able to have a baby and be able to be with her a lot, but also still be able to run my company.
Love that. That's yeah. The best feeling.
It really is.
So I was reading some of your blog posts, and in one post that you wrote back in December of 2022, you had talked about your word of the year, but also how through different struggles, your business was kind of what got you through in different ways. Can you speak more to that and like your relationship to your work throughout the years and even now?
Yeah. Well, I think if you're a creative person, you probably understand that you have to be creative. You can't not be. There has to be an outlet for all of that creativity to be a happy person. And that's certainly how I feel. I really need that creative outlet, and I need to be creating every week to be the best version of myself. So I'm really lucky that I get to do that. And I worked really hard to be able to maintain that, because I know it's the only option I have. If I were to get a job as, I don't know, an accountant, I would probably fall into a deep depression. So I do feel really lucky that I have this outlet. That said, I mean, that was before I had my baby. I think now my priorities have shifted a little bit, and I try and keep that balance, but I'm still really thankful that I have the creative outlet, and I think I'm a better mom because of it too, that I'm allowed to like go and have my work time that feels really fulfilling, and then I can go home and have my mom time, and I can give 100% there without feeling like I'm stuck or anything. So I mean, I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, it does. You really kind of looked at like, what do you want for your lifestyle, and what would be the most meaningful work and format for your days, and really created this career and shaped your choices around that. Versus, I mean, as I'm sure you've experienced, like the fashion industry can be such a toxic environment to work in for so many people, and even sometimes hard to break out of that or see a different way of working. But you've been able to do that, envision that, and then live that out.
Yeah, most definitely. And I also think there's obviously negatives that come with owning your own business. There's extra stress. There's an uncertain income. Some years have been better than others. I'm lucky that my husband has a really steady job, so we can count on that when things are a little slower with mood. But, you know, that there's always a balance. And I think it works really well for me, especially at this moment.
So yeah, you also in that same blog post had talked about playing safe financially, but also taking risks with exciting designs. So on the business side, how do you decide like what risks to take and when to take them in your business?
Well, I think the more that I've been doing this, the less risky things feel in general, because I've already made a lot of mistakes and I don't make them again. So things feel less and less risky season by season. And in addition, we've developed a lot of different styles and a lot of pattern blocks that I know fit well and I know sell well. And I've seen what colors sell well and what patterns sell well. And so it's been easier to make those design decisions feeling really confident that they probably will be successful. On the other hand, yeah, I mean, there are styles that I make that I really love that I know might not sell as well, but I feel really passionate about them. I mean, like for risk taking, I make sure that we have really low expenses. So like our studio is very affordable and it's not the most glamorous studio, but it works for us. I'm not buying like 2,000 yards of fabric every season. I might start with 200 yards of fabric and then see how we do. And I order from companies that usually have the fabrics we like in stock, so it's not too long to get more. So I'm every place that I can, so that if something doesn't go well, it doesn't absolutely ruin the season.
That's smart. I think it's tricky sometimes for designers, and maybe you feel this as well, of do you follow the creativity or do you pay attention to like the numbers and the sales data and the finances? And so what is it like when you're obviously very passionate about the creative side and that's fulfilling, but then balancing more the business side of things as well?
Yeah, I think it's just being in a different mindset depending on the day. So some days I'll have really creative days and I'll only think about making something new and exciting. And then maybe a few days later, I'll look at that and be like, I'll look at that with the business side and I'll think, okay, is this going to work? Is this going to sell? Is this going to work for the business? Or do I need to just like put it aside and do something else? So yeah, it's just maybe day by day how I take things, whether it's a creative day or a business day. Is today the day to like just film a ton of beautiful content? Or is today the day to edit a normal nappy caption on it?
That's a smart way to do it, where you don't have to spread yourself, like move your brain back and forth between these different like approaches to things. You can kind of indulge one whole day in the creative and then like switch gears the next day. I can see how that would be like way less scattered and be able to focus on both and do well.
It's true. And I think having a baby has actually helped me with that because I have so much less time now that I really have to be decisive about what I'm going to do in one day. And it's not, I don't have like 8 hours to waste. So I have maybe 4 or 5 hours and I have one task that I have to do.
Yeah, I'm not a mom myself, but I've heard that from a lot of other mom friends and colleagues that I have that they're like, I thought I was productive, but then I had a baby and now I'm like, I can get stuff done. And
I'm really productive.
Yeah. I can focus like nothing else.
Yeah. I feel like when I look at the numbers, I'm like making the same amount of money and working less than half the time. And now I'm like, wow, was I really wasting that much time?
Yeah, that's so cool though. That's great though.
It's great. Yeah. But now I'm like, yeah, I worked 5 years full time and I didn't need to.
Yeah. What do you think? Is it really just having that time constraint that like changed everything? Or are there kind of other tips that you could share maybe for other people who are don't have kids yet but want to kind of tap into that productivity earlier?
Yeah. Well, I think I've had to lean a lot more on my employees and trust them a lot more, and that's been really good. I mean, if you have good employees, then that's what you do. So when I started my business in the U.S., I spent so much time and energy doing like craft shows for maybe 3 years, and at the time it felt like what I had to do, and then COVID happened and I didn't have the pop-ups and I freaked out and I was like, what am I gonna do? I don't have this income source. And I've ended up making more money because the pop-ups were exhausting and they were draining, and I was designing and
it
making
takes
things
so much time
for the pop-ups, you know, paying to travel, and I was, you know, paying for the admission. So that's a good example. Like, I was spending so much energy and time doing something that wasn't maximally profitable. And so when I stopped doing that and I focused that energy and time on online sales, it was like just way better. So I think that's just one example of that situation that I'm in now, is I'm spending less time and energy, but then I have more time and energy in a more detailed and focused way.
Yeah, that's
target specific things that I know will work. But you know, I don't think I could have done this just starting off. I needed to get to the point where I knew better what was going to be successful, so I didn't waste time on the things that weren't. But how do you learn? You have to make those mistakes.
Yeah, try it and see if it works. But now that you have kind of that information, you can say, okay, what is the like maximum return for the time I can, you know, invest in these different areas?
Yeah. And I probably wouldn't have been able to do that 5 years ago. So,
yeah, that's a good point. So you mentioned you sell wholesale as well as retail. So what does kind of like your sales and marketing, like how do you connect with customers and sell the pieces now?
So, yeah, I mean, I would say 25 to 30% of our sales are wholesale and the rest are online sales. The wholesale, we're just on Fair Marketplace. I have been to New York, and that's another situation of like putting way much time, money and energy into something that doesn't pay off, in my opinion. So we just sell on Fair Marketplace, which is just like a wholesale platform. And we get customers that way, and that's been great. And then our online sales, I would say around 70% of our online sales are from return customers. So
That's amazing.
That's nice. I don't have to do a ton of advertising, but we do need new customers. So we put advertising dollars into Facebook and Instagram marketing. And I obviously am pretty active on Instagram, posting different things, different content. So that's our strategy. I mean, obviously we've got our mailing list, but yeah, it's mostly Facebook and Instagram advertising for new customers, but we've got a lot of return customers.
Well, yeah, that's amazing percentage of return customers. It really shows your the people who have bought your pieces are super loyal and see the quality in the styles that you make.
Yeah, it's really encouraging. And like getting new customers is usually the hardest part. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is our product is like, it's a good price point for doing Facebook and Instagram marketing. We're spending maybe like $70 to $80 on one new customer purchase, but our average order cost is maybe minimum like $130. So it definitely pays off to do the advertising. Whereas if our product were only $50, it wouldn't pay off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then those customers are returning most likely, it sounds like. So it's not just that one order that you're gaining. You're getting that first order and then also the future returning orders from them.
Yeah. I mean, when I do the math, I think usually with our advertising dollars, we usually about break even in between like production cost and all of that and overhead. So if we can break even with the first order from advertisement, we hope that we have a return customer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it definitely pays off. So
yeah, are you finding that like Facebook and Instagram advertising is still working well? Because I've seen, I don't know, I feel like the social media landscape has shifted a lot and just what's working and the reach you can get either organically or with paid ads even. And so
yeah,
I've been hearing that it's like, okay, is it working? It's not working as well as they used to.
It used to be free, so it's not great anymore. That was great when it was free. Now it's not free. So yeah, I mean, right now our goal is just to be able to break even with an initial order and the advertising dollars. And if we can do that, I'm perfectly happy with it. I don't know how things will be in a year. It might not be worth it to advertise anymore on Instagram. And we went 2019 when it was free.
Yeah, can't beat that.
Nope.
So what is the best business decision you've ever made?
The best, probably finding like the cheapest studio we could possibly find. that was a good one, but probably the best one was like not taking out a loan. I think if I had taken out a loan, I would be probably bankrupt right now. I don't know. I mean, like, I can't imagine trying to pay back a huge business loan owning a clothing company. I'm sure there are a lot of different businesses that you could bet on paying back a loan easily, but apparel is not usually profitable enough to bet on that. So yeah, maybe not take. And obviously when you're using your own money, it's way more stressful at the time. Mm-hmm. And taking out a loan feels like you're pushing out that stress and you don't have to worry about it right away, but that loan will come due and then you might be screwed. So I mean, I think I've definitely avoided a lot of awful things by not taking out a loan. And I mean, I don't want to name names, but there's one brand right now that I know took out a loan and is right now shutting down. So if you do that, a lot of the times the hard times come and you're in a bad position. So
It sounds like you've really taken not only like a slow approach to clothing, but a slower approach to growing your business and really kind of pacing yourself and the finances to really make this work kind of for your long-term vision.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. I think it's really difficult to know what the future holds. I love what I do right now, but I could see myself doing something else in 10 years. So I think for now, this works really well and I'm very happy with it. And I love making clothes for people. Yeah, I mean, I think it's worked out really well for the time being.
I'm good. So kind of on the note of like the future, is there anything fun that you're working on, super excited about that you're able to share?
So, well, I just got a new fabric and it's our fall fabric. I did mention earlier that we're going to do a button up. And so we're going to do, I just ordered like a machine to attach snaps. And I think that will be a really great core style for us. I mean, who doesn't love a button up?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thrilled to finally be able to make one because I wear button ups all the time and I just wish I had one that we made. So that'll be fun. Great. And Another great thing that, I mean, we do a lot of like different patchwork pieces over the year, but we do have one in development that's going to be, there's going to be a top version and a dress version, and they're going to be blue. And I think they're going to come out in like 2 weeks. Whenever I get an idea in my head, that's one of these more spontaneous things, but we usually end up dropping it really quickly. So it might come out. I don't know when this podcast is going to come out, but it might be out before then.
Yeah, this podcast, I think, will come out July 30th. So it might be around the same time.
Yeah, I was thinking July 28th. So might already be out. If it works out well, I mean, I might make it and hate it, but in my head, it sounds great.
Cool. We'll have to look in the put a link to, if you do decide to launch it, link in the show notes so people can check it out.
I'm sampling it this weekend, so.
Cool. So I have one more question, Kat, that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
One value. I think I would maybe just say acceptance. No, that's pretty broad, but I think like acceptance of different body types, acceptance of the people who are making the clothes, and the facts that someone does have to make clothes, and that hopefully it's someone who's like paid well and taken care of. So yeah, probably that word.
Yeah, it's cool. I don't think anyone's answered that before. I like that answer.
Oh, thanks.
This has been great, Kat, to hear more about your story and the adventure you've been on with this brand, Pimmit. Where can people find out more about the brand and see what you're doing online?
So you can find us at PimmitApparel.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at PimmitApparel for any exciting new stuff that I might do a sneak peek of.
Cool. I'll put links to those in the show notes, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Allison. This was great.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.